We're going to pick it up in verse 9, where we finished last week, Paul explaining how Abraham and David, we saw they were two pillars of the Jewish faith in their history. Abraham being one of the fathers, in fact the chief father, Isaac and Jacob being the other two, that were given the promises to Israel to have a kingdom on the earth, to have a specific piece of land on the earth, to be a mighty nation, and to have that blessing from God. Then David, of course, was given a promise also from God that he would have a king on his throne forever and that his kingdom would be everlasting. And so the king and the kingdom in David was promised. And so the Jews in Israel who would listen to Paul, who had a gospel to uncircumcision, to Gentiles, you could see where they would object and say, wait a minute, we've got exclusive rights to salvation, to the kingdom, to the king. We've got a heritage. Even if we are sinners, as Paul pointed out in Romans 1, 2, and 3, Abraham and David and the promise to the fathers should be upheld. In fact, all throughout Israel's history, you may recall that when Israel failed, someone in Israel always appealed to the promise God made to the fathers. Right? And after David, they would appeal to the promise God made to David, to have a king and a kingdom established. And of course, God is faithful to remember his promises. And so the objection to Israel from Israel here is that we've got promises that even though we failed to keep our side of the bargain, God made promises to Abraham and David, and so we have some sort of privilege, some sort of advantage in our circumcision, in our heritage that goes back to Father Abraham. And Paul's trying to take that away. Remember in Romans 3 at the end, he says, where is boasting then? It's not by law, it's not by works, it's by faith, right? And so he took away those two things that Israel boasted in, and he starts chapter 4 dealing with what Abraham, the father of Israel, found about his flesh. Abraham, according to the scriptures, was not justified by works. We saw last week he was justified by faith, Genesis 15 verse 6 says. And it was before he's in circumcision. David even testified that when he committed adultery, murder, hypocrisy, and other sins, God did not count those sins to him. He did not impute sins to David. He forgave him, and from David's perspective, for no good reason, just out of his grace. And so he says in Romans 4, verse 6, David describes the blessedness of the man unto whom God imputes righteousness without works. Romans 4, 1 through 8 is the passage you need if you're trying to show people from the scripture that God is always justified people by faith without works. And that's what Paul's doing. He's going back into Israel's scripture saying, look at David. When he committed sins, God didn't kill him. God didn't say you're going to hell. He gave him sure mercies, which is what we studied last week at the end. Look at Abraham, who's the father of the nation of Israel. He's justified by faith without works when he was given the promise in Genesis 15, verse 6. Okay? And so that's where we ended last week. Now, Paul's going to start in verse 9 here about identifying to whom these blessings come to. Because when Paul says these people are justified by faith without works, again, Israel can claim, well, those are our fathers. David was our king, and Abraham was our father, so those blessings are remaining inside of Israel. John 4, 22, salvation was of Israel. And so even if it's true they didn't have works as meritorious for their justification, it was still true that they were part of their lineage. And so Paul wants to make the point that Abraham was not in circumcision. Abraham was not under the law. He was not part of Israel when he was counted righteous by his faith. Okay? And so what he's doing here again is taking away everything that Israel says is our privilege. Remember back in Romans chapter 3, verse 1, where Paul asked the question, what advantage then has the Jew? What profit is there of circumcision? And he says, much every way, chiefly because they were committed to the oracles of God. So God gave them, he spoke to them. He gave them the oracles and the promises and the covenants and everything else. Now, of course, he has to ask the question because he's already proven them already under sin and unbelief. But according to Romans 3, they have an advantage. But when we turn the page to Romans 4, Paul's proving here that being an Israelite, being a circumcised Jew, has no advantage to justify you before God. And so, again, it's so important to understand not just specific Bible verses, but where in Paul's book he's writing, where in his argument he's talking about. You can go to Romans chapter 2 and persuade somebody that their works save them in Romans chapter 2, where Paul says if you do good works, then you'll get righteousness in life. And if you do bad works, then you'll get condemnation. You can turn to Romans chapter 4, or Romans chapter 3 rather, and find that Jews have an advantage if you teach Romans 3, 1, 2, and 3. It's not until you read down later in the passage that you learn that that advantage is now gone. So there was a time in the past that Israel had an advantage, that they were the chief nation, that they were the one that had that spiritual privilege, that spiritual standing before God above all the nations. But in this dispensation, they do not. Okay, so Romans 4, Paul is walking us through that understanding. And he's going to end up in chapter 5, where he goes all the way back to Adam and says that we're all counted in sin, and it's only by the grace of God that anybody can be saved at any time. Okay, so that's where he's leading to, which of course is that mystery truth. So, Romans 4, verse 9, he asks the question, comes this blessedness then upon the circumcision only? David was circumcised. David was under the law. So to say that God gave him a special grace, that's what Israel would expect from them being God's chosen people, that God would give them some sort of benefit, right? But Paul here is going back to Abraham saying, this blessedness, does it come upon the circumcision only, or upon the uncircumcision also? For we say the faith was reckoned to Abraham for righteousness. Now, he identifies Abraham here, of course, because David, obviously, was under the law of program circumcised. So he goes back to Abraham, the father of the nation, says, well, how was it reckoned to him? How was righteousness reckoned on Abraham's account? And he's going to use a chronological argument here. Okay, so he's asking, is it to the circumcision only or uncircumcision also? Now, just as a parenthetical statement here to keep in your mind, do you remember in the book of Galatians chapter 2, in Galatians chapter 2, verses 5, 6, and 7, where Paul goes up to Jerusalem and has a little sit-down with Peter and the 12. Remember that? And in Galatians chapter 2, there were people from Jerusalem who were trying to put Paul's audience in bondage by telling them they had to be circumcised to receive the blessings, to be part of the righteousness, whatever it was. Okay, and of course, Galatians is all about that, proving similar things to what Romans 4 does, that the law and circumcision has nothing to do with your righteousness. Okay, but Galatians 2, 5, Paul says, we gave place by subjection, no, not for an hour, that the proof of the gospel might continue with you. Down in verse 6, those who seem to be somewhat, whosoever they were, it maketh no matter to me. God accepts no man's person. For they who seem to be somewhat in conference added nothing to me, but contrary, and here's where you learn that Paul gave them some information. Contrarywise, when they saw that the gospel of the uncircumcision was committed to me, as the gospel of the circumcision was unto Peter, they gave, in verse 9, says they gave us the right hands of fellowship. So in verse 7, notice the two gospels there. Okay, there's the gospel of the circumcision, which you can make an argument is slightly different than the gospel of the kingdom. Okay, the gospel of the kingdom was David's gospel, was the gospel that God gave to David when he said, I'm going to give you a king and a kingdom that'll last forever. And so when Jesus comes saying, I'm the king and the kingdom is going to come, it's at hand, that's the gospel of the kingdom. Okay, the gospel of the circumcision goes all the way back to Abraham, where God promised Abraham that his seed would be his nation. His chosen people, the circumcised people, would be part of his covenant above all the other nations. And so that had to do with the nation being above the other nations. Not just a king and a kingdom that Israel had. They'd be above the others. Okay? And so this was a foundation for that kingdom gospel. So Peter's going around to the circumcision, telling them of the good news that the promise that was given to Abraham will be fulfilled in the Messiah. Of course, as the king of the kingdom. Okay? So the kingdom gospel and the circumcision gospel go hand in hand. But Paul identifying here, there's a difference between what Peter was teaching and his commission and what Paul is teaching and his commission. Peter was sent to the circumcision, just like Jesus, to the circumcision in his earthly ministry. Paul had a gospel of the uncircumcision. Now, pray tell, where in the Bible anywhere does God have good news to those heathen Gentiles that he called reprobate in chapter 1 of Romans? Nowhere. Nowhere do you find good news for Gentiles in the Bible. It's always given to his chosen people that he picked out of Abraham, the covenanted circumcised people, the nation of Israel, David, you know. Those are the people that God works through and gives promises and benefits and advantages. The Gentiles, they got nothing. Ephesians 2, 11 and 12, they were given up. They're without hope. Okay, the only way for them to receive blessing was through God's chosen people, right? Which, of course, they could at any time. But so in Galatians 2, down in verse 7, Paul here identifying that he's got a gospel from the Lord to uncircumcision. It's not a gospel of the circumcision whereby the world will be blessed through them. It's a gospel to the uncircumcision, which tells you there's different content there. How can God give a good news? What good news is there for uncircumcision? Okay? Unless you're talking about going through Israel. And so Romans 4, we're starting to learn about that, where Paul asks the question, when did this righteousness get counted to Abraham? When he was circumcised or uncircumcised? And we're going to see the beginning of this gospel of uncircumcision. Because there's a difference, folks. There's a reason why in the book of Genesis that it spent so many chapters just on Abraham's life. Because things change in his life. You ever wonder about that? Genesis 1 through about 9 or 10 covers like 2,000 years of human history. Then in Genesis 12 through 29, you got one guy's life. Okay, because he's the father of Israel, but we'll learn today he's also the father of all the men believe. There's important things that happen in his life that we need to account for. Okay, so Romans 4, the question on the table is, when did the blessing that Abraham, we've already proven Abraham got when he, by his faith, was counted righteousness by God, in verse 5, when did this come upon him? He says in verse 9 at the end, for we say that faith was reckoned to Abraham for righteousness. Now, the we say there, obviously, he's talking about his fellow Jews. He's talking about Israel. Anyone who read the scripture, read Genesis 15, and they know that they've said that faith was reckoned to Abraham for righteousness. They all know that. James even said that in James 2. Okay, he just moves on to circumcision and works. But so this was something that they could read, they could know. This is not mystery information. Paul's just walking them through how God is right and just to do it. Okay, he's not breaking any of his promises by giving blessing to Gentiles. Okay, and so how was it reckoned in Genesis 15:6? Of course, the answer is in verse 10. It was reckoned when he was not in circumcision. It was when he was in uncircumcision. Right. And so that's when God, in Genesis 15:6, said it's counted for righteousness. So on the board, I have a really detailed look at that part of the dispensational chart that we often just draw Abraham for. But here we're talking about Abraham's life and his sons and the changes that happened in here. Okay, that's what we're looking at. In Genesis chapter 12 is the first time that God gives Abram a promise. And I intentionally put Abram because his name was Abram at the time. It wasn't Abraham. He wasn't circumcised. He wasn't under the law program. He wasn't a Jew. Okay, he wasn't even a Gentile, because a Gentile implies there's a Jewish nation somewhere. He was a guy on the earth that God just plucked out and said, I'm going to give you a special grace and a promise. Why did God choose Abram? There's no reason. There's no reason. There's no work that he said, I'm going to choose you because you're a special guy. No, he just chose him. It was by the election, by grace, as Romans 9 and 10 will explain. Okay, so it says in Joshua chapter 24 that his parents were idolaters.
Yeah.
Okay, so again, God chose Abram and gave him a promise in Genesis 12. Let's go back there real quick just to remind ourselves of it. And Paul is asking this question to the folks who are coming back saying, hey, we've got scriptures that give us a promised advantage. And he's saying, well, let's look at those scriptures. Let's go back to the beginning, Genesis, and see what happened in those scriptures. The Lord said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country, Genesis 12, verse 1, and from thy kindred and from thy father's house into a land that I will show thee. I will make of thee a great nation. I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. A blessing to who? The other people, right? on the world. Verse 3, I will bless them that bless thee and curse him that curses thee, and in thee shall all the families of the earth be blessed. And so that's the first time God gave Abram this privilege, this grace, this honor, that there's nothing he has to do to get it. God just said, I'm going to do it for you. Okay, so he obeys them, and he continues on. In Genesis chapter 15, God promises Abram a son, which he reiterates in chapter 13. And in chapter 15, Abram's a little curious why he hasn't got one yet, going, look, God, we're pretty old, you know, so maybe you just got this one wrong. And of course, God confirms with him that, no, I'm going to give you a son. And he says down in verse 5, he brought him forth abroad and said, look now towards heaven and tell the stars, count the stars, if thou be able to number them. And he said unto him, so shall thy seed be. And he believed in the Lord, and he counted it to him for righteousness. So the question is, when was Abraham counted righteous by his faith? Which is how we've already shown he was justified. Genesis 15, verse 6. His name was still Abram. No law was given. He wasn't even circumcised yet. Way back here, he was counted righteous by faith. No works. Another question will be useful later is, what did he believe in? It was not in the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. It was that his seed would be innumerable like the stars. It would number like the stars. Genesis 15, verse 5. So Jesus, or God here, is reconfirming, reestablishing the promise he made in Genesis 12 to Abram. Abraham believes, and God counts his faith for righteousness. So we can see very clearly, it's a very simple argument Paul makes, that, well, if you think this is this blessing of righteousness by faith without works is only for circumcision, when did Abraham get it? He wasn't circumcision. What an offensive thing that is. Okay? Because Abraham is the father of Israel. He's one of the fathers. He's the guy that Israel looked for as their identity. But John the Baptist comes in Matthew 3 and says, you know, God can create of these stones, children of Abraham. So just because you were born of that doesn't mean much. It's hard to find an example for us to illustrate that to us in 21st century America, especially when we try to boast in our country as being a melting pot and we're so much individualistic and not so much caught up in lineages anymore. Back a few hundred years ago in England, there was a lot of that going on with the kings and everything else. But the only thing, the closest thing, and it's really a bad analogy, is to think about and consider the rights or the privileges you think you have as an American. And what if someone told you that you don't have those just because you live in America? Just because you're a citizen of America doesn't mean you have those. Would that be offensive to you? Wouldn't you pull out the Constitution? Wouldn't you say, wait a minute, look at this. I've got these things that said right here. Okay, and that's what Paul's doing to Israel. He's pulling out their constitution, their scriptures, and saying, you don't have privileges just because you're circumcised, just because you call yourself a Jew because you're an Israelite. Okay? And so there's something here where Paul is trying to reveal a greater truth about how all men are saved, even Israel. Okay? And so he's doing that by taking away their advantages. So again, just to reiterate before we move on here, Romans 4, 9, and 10, Abram, or Abraham, as Paul calls him, was counted righteous by his faith in what God told him before he was circumcised in Genesis 17, hundreds of years before the law came, which we'll see in a bit. And it was when he was yet uncircumcised, he was counted among the other people of the world. Okay? Now, that's where you see the seedling of good news to uncircumcised people. He was uncircumcised. And God said, I'm going to bless you. Right? God said, I'm going to count your faith to righteousness while he was uncircumcised. And so, from here on out, anyone who's uncircumcised down here, could they say, wait a minute, God did it to Abraham, why can't he do it to me? Right? That's what Paul's pointing out. Ever since Abraham in the scriptures, God became more and more exclusive and made it more and more works-based, more covenants, and more things added to it, added to the promise. And so there became this distance, this separation between Israel and the Gentiles. And Paul's saying, look, there's no difference anymore. There's no separation. There's neither Jew nor Gentile. God justifies all men by faith without works in this dispensation of grace. Just like Abraham, when he gave him righteousness by faith, for no reason by grace. There was no reason back here. Okay? By the way, when God gave the promise to Abraham and said, your seed would be a blessing, and eventually says the same promise to Isaac and Jacob, there are more people coming from these people's families than what's on the board here. But how often do you hear in the scripture the fathers of Israel being Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? Okay. The point being, and we'll get to Romans 9, 10, 11, that the promises given to Israel about their land and their nation and their kingdom was narrowed down to a specific group of people. Okay. Abraham had more sons than Isaac. Didn't he have Ishmael coming off here? Wasn't he his seed as well? And what about Isaac? Didn't he have Esau here? Wasn't he his seed as well? Okay? And so weren't there people in Israel that didn't enter the promised land? And so you see, there's lots of people that don't inherit the promises, don't inherit the covenants. But we'll get to that a little bit later here. Look at Romans 4, verse 11. So far we've seen that the righteousness imputed by faith without works was given to Abraham when he was yet in uncircumcision. Okay? Point Gentiles, right? Romans 4, verse 11. He received the sign of circumcision, a seal of the righteousness of the faith, which he had yet being uncircumcised, that he might be the father of all them that believe, though they be not circumcised, that righteousness might be imputed unto them also. So a couple things here to point out is, first off, Paul calls circumcision a sign, which is a proper scriptural thing to do when, quite frankly, a lot of Israelites, a lot of Jews would count that as the reason why they deserved privileges, because they were circumcised in the flesh. They had that lineage. And Paul says, no, that's just a sign. That's just what Genesis 17 calls a token. Back in Genesis 17 is when Abram's name was changed to Abraham from High Father or Mighty Father to Father of Many Nations, is what the names mean. But Genesis 17, down in verse 7, I will establish my covenant between me and thee and thy seed after thee, and their generations for an everlasting covenant, to be a God unto thee and to thy seed after thee. In verse 8, he talks about giving them a land for an everlasting possession. I will be their God. And God said to Abraham, thou shalt keep my covenant, in verse 9. Therefore, thou and thy seed after thee and their generations. And this is my covenant. He talks about the circumcision in verse 10 and verse 11. And so down in verse 11 is what I want. Ye shall circumcise the flesh of your foreskin, and there shall be a token of the covenant betwixt me and you. Now, What God promises to Abraham here in this covenant of circumcision sounds a lot like what he already promised him in Genesis 15, 13, and 12. That's exactly right. Okay? So what he does here is, as this circumcision, this act, this flesh sign that's going to identify these people as inheritors of the promise that he already made and gave to Abraham. Do you see what's going on? Genesis 17, God said, this is just a token. It's a token of the covenant between me and you. So did the circumcision mean anything in itself? No, not at all. It meant diddly squat. God already made a promise to Abraham. He can't break that. Okay, he made it back in Genesis chapter 12. So Genesis 17, he makes the same promise. He calls it a covenant and says, you're going to circumcise your man-child or I'll cut you off the covenant. Okay? And so it's a token.
Doesn't that make that a requirement more than a token?
Well, sure, it's a requirement, but the promise had to happen. We'll get to that in a little bit here, Jim, where he talks about it had to be a faith or else the promise was not effect. But Genesis 17, God already made the promise in chapter 12 and 15. He already made it. And it says in verse 11 that the circumcision is a token. A token is a sign or a seal. Okay? We put the sign on the road out on the street. The sign is not the road. The sign is not the way. It's just a sign. Okay? It's a label. Take the label off, you still drive on the road. Right? A seal. What does a seal do? It's just a confirmation. You get a letter from the government, you know, and it's got some sort of stamp on it. This is an official letter from the government. Does that seal mean anything? Or is it just the content of the letter that's changing your life? You're audited by the IRS, you know. It's not the seal, it's the content of the letter, you see. It's the same thing in Genesis 17. The token is nothing. It's the promise God made that he uttered a few verses earlier. What's a circumcision going to do to give them an everlasting possession? Nothing. God promised to give them everlasting possession.
It's a confirmation of the truity of what's going on.
Well, sure, it's a token. That's all. It's a sign. It's a seal. That's all it is. That's what Paul's point is that the circumcision was a sign and a seal. So neither one of those, a token, a sign, a seal, that doesn't make someone righteous. That doesn't mean that they're going to have an everlasting possession because they circumcised their flesh. Okay? And so that's what Paul's pointing out here. Again, he's trying to undercut the idea that it's works, it's by works, it's by circumcision, it's by the law, that you inherit the righteousness by faith. Okay, now back in Romans chapter 4, down in verse 11, he says, Abraham received the sign of circumcision, a seal of the righteousness of the faith which he had already. So the when he circumcised his flesh, he had already been counted righteous, right? The circumcision was in Genesis 17. When was he counted righteous? In circumcision, he's already established that. Genesis 15 was when he was counted righteous. So what's this all about? It's a seal, it's a sign, it's a symbol of what he already had. You know, he labeled himself, I'm circumcised now, partaker of the covenant that I already had, the promise I already had. Okay, it's just a seal, a sign. And of course it says in verse 11 that he might be the father of all them that believe, though they be not circumcised. His point there being the all them that believe, because it was just a seal of something he already had, which means all the people back here who are not circumcised, all the people over here that aren't circumcised, they can trace any sort of blessing that they get from God back to Abraham as a precedent, as an example, saying God gave it to Abraham by faith without works. He wasn't circumcised, you see. That's exactly what Paul's doing here. So that he might be the father of them. Now, when we say father, this is something we need to clarify, because people stumble over this passage in the book of Romans, and they stumble hard. Because in Romans chapter 4 here, this is where they think Paul is making the church Israel. They think Paul is teaching that the church gets grafted in, becomes part of, or is part of the New Testament given to Israel, and they make a mess of things because they don't understand the difference between the mystery and prophecy. But in Romans chapter 4:11, this is where it begins the confusion. Because Paul starts talking about Abraham being the father of all them that believe. The question which comes to your mind then, what does it mean to be a father? And typically when people think about Father Abraham, what they're thinking about is this, 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 the law, Israel, Jacob, Isaac, circumcision. And so that they think when they think of Father Abraham, oh, if I'm a seed of Abraham, if he's my father, then I must be true Israel. I must be part of the real covenant. I must be the true circumcision, you know. And so what these are is a picture of me, you know. That's not true. Paul's not making that point at all. In fact, Paul's tearing this stuff down. He's saying it's not the law, it's not circumcision. When was it counted to him for righteousness? Back here, when he was uncircumcised, no law, right? What does that say about you? If there's any relationship you have to Abraham at all, It goes all the way back before Israel, before the law, before circumcision. Right? And so you cannot say that I am now Israel. Okay? Which is exactly where people stumble over this. But Romans 4:11, he says he had it when he was uncircumcised, that he might be the father of all of them that believe. Paul's not saying here he's your father because you're true circumcision, you know. That's not it. He's saying that he had it in uncircumcision, of course, by faith, that he would be the father of all of them that believe. The father, by the way, is in the sense of imputed righteousness by faith. That's what Paul's dealing with here. Chapter 4, he's talking about God imputing, counting righteousness to you by faith. Here back up in Romans 4, verse 5. To him that worketh not, but believes on him that justifies the ungodly, not the godly, not the church going, not the circumcised, the ungodly, undeserving person God justifies, his faith is counted for righteousness. Right? And Paul's question that we're trying to answer here is does this blessedness, this righteousness imputed by faith without works come upon just Israel with circumcision? No. The answer is no, it doesn't. It can come upon anybody because of Abraham. Right? And so for someone to say Romans 4 makes me Israel, makes me circumcision, that's ridiculous. They're missing the entire argument. Okay? And so Romans 4 verse 11, the father of all them that believe. He's the father in the sense of when it was counted to him for righteousness. Question, and this is going to help us a little bit later. What was Abraham promised in Genesis 12, in Genesis 15, in Genesis 17? To have a land, to have a nation, to have a blessing above all the Gentile nations, right? That's not the issue, folks. The issue here is when God counted his faith for righteousness. You see, there's a difference. What people will inevitably do, and I have a commentator, a well-known commentator, who makes this clear statement in his commentary, wrongly, that what they will do is because they see that Abraham is our father, that somehow now we inherit the land promises, the nation promises, and the new covenant promises. That's not true. Paul is talking about imputed righteousness to you by faith without works. He's using Abraham as a precedent, as the father of that. Okay? So, by the way, you couldn't use David for that. There's a reason why he doesn't use David for that. Because David was circumcised every day of his life, except for eight. You know, that was the law. He had to be circumcised the eighth day. But David was a circumcised Jew. Abraham was uncircumcised for a lot of his life.
He wasn't a Jew.
Right? He wasn't a Jew and there was no law. So there's a reason why he's using Abraham here. Meanwhile, he's the father of all them that believe. Not all of them that circumcise or do good works. All of them that believe. Though they be not circumcised, that righteousness might be imputed unto them also. Do you see the point? When I just said there, he's not talking about the land promises or the new covenant promises. He's talking about the righteousness imputed to them by faith. That's something that, if you're not paying attention, you skip over in Genesis 15. Because the big deal back in Genesis is the beginning of Israel and the covenants and the land and all that stuff. You skip right over it. That's why it was a mystery. It kept secret since the world began. But Paul points this out saying, wait a minute here. God put that verse in there for a reason. Right? It was imputed to Abraham by faith before he was circumcised. Verse 12, and the father of the circumcision to them who are not of the circumcision only. So notice here in verse 11, Abraham, because he received righteousness counted to him by faith when he was uncircumcised, is the father of all uncircumcised who are imputed righteousness. Do you see that in verse 11? Abraham, because he was given righteousness counted to him by faith in uncircumcision, he's the father of all uncircumcision who received righteousness by faith without works. Right? He's the first. He's the father of that, you see. But in verse 12, he's also... this is a different fatherhood. He's also the father of the circumcision. Okay, so we got the father of the uncircumcision, but he's the first guy the circumcision was given to. So Abraham has two fatherhoods. See, he's the father of all those who are uncircumcised and the father of the circumcision also. Okay. In verse 12, the father of the circumcision to them who are not of the circumcision only, but who also walk in the steps of that faith of our father Abraham, which he had being yet uncircumcised. What in the world is he talking about there? Remember I pointed out to you before when Abraham was given this covenant of circumcision? Aren't there people in their lineage after him that are circumcised that aren't Israel? Consider this. Genesis 17, circumcision is given, and that's to Isaac. Does Isaac, how many kids does Isaac have? A few. Jacob is one of them. How about Esau? Was he circumcised? The covenant was you had to circumcise all your male children. Esau was circumcised. Right? There are people who are circumcised who are not Israel. Okay, what's the deal with that? He's the father of circumcision, also to those who are not circumcised, but walk in the steps of the faith of our father Abraham. Okay? Look at Ephesians 2, 11, and 11 through 13. When we need to realize, when we read through our Bible and God chooses a special people out and gives them a covenant and says, I'm going to bless you and I'm going to give you salvation, all this business, He is not forgetting about the majority of the planet. Okay, when He called Abraham out, he's one man, and Israel's a small country. There's a lot of other people on the planet. Could they get saved? One of the most popular questions that stumps people is, how in the world do Gentiles in the Old Testament get saved? I thought only Jews could get saved back there. Wrong. Wrong. Salvation was of Israel, yes, but it was provided for everybody. If a Gentile wanted to seek God out and get salvation, he can get it. Okay? And where are we at? In Ephesians chapter 2:11, we see here that the Gentiles were strangers of the covenants made to Israel. Verse 11, remember that ye being in time past Gentiles in the flesh, who are called uncircumcision, or that which is called the circumcision. So Paul's alluding to the time passed back here that, quite frankly, doesn't go back to Abram. Circumcision started here. So Paul's starting back here with the uncircumcision, the uncircumcision difference. These people here. Okay? So he says, you were called uncircumcision by the circumcision. At that time, verse 12, you were without Christ, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel, strangers from the covenants of promise. You have no hope without God in the world. Okay, pretty clear statement. They had no advantage in themselves. But how were they saved? How could they get righteousness before God? As Job asked. Okay, well, the answer is through the circumcision, through Israel, through God's provision. Okay, look at John chapter 8, verse 39. Romans 4:11 says he's the father of the circumcision, but not of them only, but of those who walk in the steps of the faith of Abraham. If, you know, it would have been a problem if Abraham, and God said, circumcise your male child, and Abraham said, nope, ain't going to do it, God. that would have been disobedience, you see. Walking in faith does what God instructs. And so Abraham, who had already been counted righteous by faith, was continually to walk in faith when God said to circumcise your son. And so on and so forth. Okay. Men of faith do what God instructs. And in John chapter 8, Jesus identifies this. Faith has always been the issue, folks. That's what we're trying to point out here. John chapter 8, down in verse 39. The Pharisees did not get this. The Pharisees claimed Abraham as their father. And they answered then to him, Abraham is our father. Jesus saith to them, if you were Abraham's children, you would do the works of Abraham. Jesus clearly is identifying people who should be walking in the steps of the faith of Abraham. All right? And so those who did what was necessary by faith, those are the people that Paul's saying could be justified by faith, by Father Abraham. Okay? Gentiles who came to Israel by faith and blessed them as God's chosen people, as Genesis 12 says, they were doing what God instructed them to do. Men of faith would do that. All right? And we see example of it. Look at Luke chapter 7. Luke chapter 7, Jesus came to Israel, His chosen people, and how many times, you got a few recorded in the Bible, did a Gentile come up to Him, exhibit the faith, walked in the steps of faith, did the works that faith required, and Jesus said, whoa, you're blessed. You're not even circumcised, but I'm going to bless you anyway. Luke chapter 7, verse 9. Now again, you have to be careful here, because when you start talking about Paul going to Gentiles, these are the verses that people bring up. Oh, Jesus taught the same thing. Look, He blessed a Gentile here. They're totally missing it, you see. What did Abraham believe again? He believed that his seed would be like the stars. He didn't have any faith in the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. You don't understand that. Okay? Jesus did not teach the gospel of the grace of God in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. God had always a provision for all men on the planet. Even in Israel's program, even when He instituted circumcision, the uncircumcision could still bless them and get a blessing. Okay? Men of faith would do what God instructed. Luke chapter 7, verse 2, a certain centurion's servant who was dear unto him was sick and ready to die. And when he heard of Jesus, he sent unto him the elders of the Jews, beseeching him that he would come and heal his servant. When they came to Jesus, they besought him instantly, saying that he was worthy for whom he should do this. Why was he worthy? Because he walked in the steps of the faith of their father Abraham. who did what God instructed him, who believed in hope against hope that God will fulfill the promise that he said, Genesis 12:3, that if they bless you, I'll bless them. If they curse you, I'll curse them, right? If you're a Gentile, that's what you're following. Okay? The people who are blessing Israel today, hoping to get a blessing, are exactly right in the wrong dispensation. You hear what I'm saying? If they're Gentiles, they should be blessing Israel if they're under this dispensation. But they're not. We're in a different dispensation, dispensation of grace, where there's neither Jew nor Gentile. But Luke 7, verse 4, the Jews come to Jesus, because the Gentile couldn't, and they say, this guy's worthy of it. This Gentile is worthy of your healing, for he loves our nation, and he has built us a synagogue. You see there? So here's the Gentile walking in the steps of the faith of Abraham, yet being uncircumcised. On what basis can that guy get a blessing from the Messiah given to Israel? By his faith, folks. By his faith. Look at Luke chapter 7, verse 6. Jesus went with them, and when he was not far from the house, the centurion sent friends to him, saying unto him, Lord, trouble not thyself, for I am not worthy thou shouldst enter under my roof. He's a Gentile. This is not a Jew here that he's going to heal. Wherefore, neither thought I myself worthy to come unto thee, but say in a word, and my servant shall be healed. For I also am a man set under authority, having under me soldiers. And I say unto one, go, and he goes, he obeys. Just like God told Abraham, go, and Abraham went. And he said, circumcise your son, and he did. Like God told Abraham, sacrifice your son, and he was gonna. Right? Walking in the steps of the faith of Abraham does the works that God tells the man of faith to do. Now, again, let's remind ourselves, when was Abraham's faith counted for righteousness?
Before
any of that. Right? When God told him not to do anything. Okay, but Luke chapter 7, these people here in verse 9, when Jesus heard these things, he marveled at them. And here's this Gentile who's obedient to his master, who blesses Israel, and he's ministering among his chosen people and can't find anybody that actually has faith in it. But this guy, Jesus says, I say unto you, have not found so great faith, no, not in Israel. You see that? How do you know his faith? By his works. Because a man of faith will believe what God instructs him to do, and God instructed these people to bless Israel. Right? Jesus said, I haven't seen faith like this in all Israel. Right? He can see them by their fruits. You see the difference here? So, back to, let's look at Matthew chapter 8, verse 11 and 12. Isn't this fascinating how when you read Paul, you now understand what in the world Jesus was doing back here. He wasn't sending the gospel to Gentiles. He wasn't going proclaiming among the Gentile nations, you all can be saved by faith without works. No, he wasn't doing that. He was going to Israel. And it happened to be that some Gentiles who were zealous by faith to do good works to God came to him and said, hey, you're the one. Right? Gentiles believed and he didn't. And Israel didn't. Matthew chapter 8, verse 11. By the way, that was to their shame. Matthew 8, verse 11. I say unto you. Now, this is the parallel passage in Matthew 8 where in verse 10, Jesus says, I have not found so great faith, no, not in Israel. Mm-hmm. Verse 11 says, I say unto you that many shall come from the east and west and shall sit down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. You see that? Many will come from other nations and sit down with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. But the children of the kingdom shall be cast out into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. You see that? That's interesting. So Jesus is making a prophecy here. There's people who come from the circumcision lineage, who are part of Israel in the flesh, who will not inherit the kingdom. But there are people like the Luke 7 guy, like Cornelius, like those guys back in the Old Testament who blessed Israel. Okay? They're going to be in the kingdom. Isn't that interesting? So they're going to receive a promise that true Israelites in the flesh don't get. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 9, verse 22. Matthew 9, 21, 22. This is a story that you've all heard where the woman has an issue in her flesh. And there's a crowd around Jesus and she comes up and touches the hem of his garment. Remember that? Mm-hmm. Matthew 9, verse 21. She said within herself, if I may but touch his garment, I shall be whole. That's a woman of faith. And you've heard that taught by charismatic preachers when you go home, right? I mean, this guy's preaching. There's a woman of faith. I mean, she trusts in the healing, right? That's because that's what she understood. He was the Messiah. He wasn't just another Joe Blow. He was not a Todd Bentley. Okay, he was Jesus, the Messiah. And she knew that he was healing people and had the power of the Son of God to do it. All she had to do was just touch the hem of his garment. Right? She had faith in this. In verse 22, Jesus turned him about. When he saw her, he said, daughter, be of good comfort. Thy faith have made thee whole. You see that? Faith has always been the issue. Even in Israel's program, faith was the issue. Doing the rituals of the law and the works did nothing. There were things that God required, but faith was the issue. The man of faith would do them anyway. You see? That's why God said back there in Malachi, I don't want your sacrifices when your heart's not towards me. Right? So faith has always been the issue. The works were just a testimony of their faith because the man of faith would do what God says. Right? Well, how hypocritical for people to think that by doing those works they can earn their way. It's never been the case, folks. Never been the case. Matthew 9, this woman had faith and Jesus said, your faith has made thee whole. And the woman was made whole from that hour. All right? Matthew 15, 28. We've covered before the story of the Gentile, the Canaanite woman, Gentile. And she's chasing Jesus and the disciples down. And Jesus ignores her. Remember Matthew 15? Matthew 15, she starts in verse 27, or 21 rather. Down in verse 22. Behold, a woman of Canaan came out of the same coast and cried unto him, saying, have mercy on me, O Lord, thou son of David. She has faith that he is the son of David. There are Pharisees who are in the temple who don't believe that. Right? So where's faith found? Here in a Canaanite woman. You see? She says, thou son of David, O Lord, my daughter is grievously vexed with the devil. But he answered her not a word. Why not? He explains later why he doesn't answer. He explains later why he tells his disciples to ignore her. Because he was not sent to her. He was sent to Israel. It's not supposed to be this way. The promises and the covenants are given to his chosen people, not to them. Right? So in Matthew 15, verse 26, he says, it's not meet, it's not fitting, it's not proper to take the children's bread, the children of Abraham, Israel. Take the children's bread and to cast it to dogs, Gentiles. Right? It's not proper. And now she could have turned around and said, oh, what to do? I guess I lost that on that. She knew, though, the program. She had knowledge of Genesis 12. She had knowledge of what the purpose of Israel is supposed to be. Yes, I understand that we are not your chosen people, but isn't the purpose of your chosen people to bless us? Right? Matthew 15, verse 27. Truth, Lord, yet the dogs eat of the crumbs which fall from the master's table. And Jesus answered, O woman, great is thy faith. Be it unto thee even as thou wilt. And her daughter was made whole. So again, you have faith being the issue there. She understood some things. She listened to what God said and pursued it. There are people in Israel who ignored what the Scriptures said. Didn't Jesus say, search the Scriptures, they speak of me? Right? If they would only read, they would understand. And here's a Canaanite woman. She read, apparently. She knew. She attended synagogue. She couldn't be down in front with the Jews, but she attended and she listened and she believed. Okay? God had always made provision for people on the entire planet. Even just because he set up a chosen nation to be above the others doesn't mean the other nations can't get blessed. There's just a channel through which they get blessed. You see? There's a right way and a wrong way. Don't we, Christians often say today, there's one way to salvation. Jesus Christ. Right? Well, how's that different than saying there was one way for salvation back here? Through Israel. There's no difference. Okay? It was a channel of blessing that we're talking about. And so in Matthew 15, you see it in Luke 7, another place we've already seen. Acts 10 is the other place. Acts 10, verse 2. Don't stumble over Cornelius. He's just like a Canaanite woman. In Acts 10, 2, he's a devout man. Okay? Cornelius is someone who understands the Old Testament faith. He's a devout man, one that feared God with all his house, gave much alms to the people, and prayed to God always. That's why the angel sent Peter to Cornelius. Okay? Because there was not faith like that, even all Jerusalem. Right? And so in Acts 10, here's a man of faith who's doing what the man of faith should do, and he received a blessing as a result. Okay? And so back to Romans 4, you say, why are you going through all this stuff? Because in Romans chapter 4, Paul has three groups of people here that we need to identify. Romans 4, verse 11. Abraham was counted righteous before he was circumcised, that he might be the father of all them that believe that are uncircumcised. Number one. Verse 12, number 2, the father of the circumcision. Right? Number 2. But to them who are not of the circumcision only, but also who walk in the steps of that faith of our father Abraham. So when the circumcision and that program was instituted, you've got a third group now. Before circumcision, they're all the same. There's no Jews or Gentiles back here. Right? But over here, now you've got Jews and Gentiles. So he's the father of all these people, blessed by faith without works. The father of these people, and the father of these people who by faith do what God instructs. He's the father of anyone that believes and does what God says to do. Right? He's the pattern. He's the example. He's the one there, the chief, the father. There's no better word for it. Okay? He's the one that institutes the pattern, so to speak. The word father means that. Okay? The one who institutes the pattern. All right? The word mother talks about material. That's where what you're made of. The mother provides what you're made of. The father provides the pattern. Isn't that interesting how that fits out with modern science? All right? The father's the pattern. In 1 Corinthians 4:15, Paul says that he's the pattern and he's the father of Corinthians. I've begotten you through the gospel, he says. He's the pattern. 1 Timothy 1:16. Abraham's the pattern of righteousness by faith to the uncircumcision, to all that believe. Right? To the circumcision and the uncircumcision. So you have to be careful to identify what promises the Bible's talking about and to which people they're talking to. Paul is not saying you're part of Israel now, you're part of the circumcision. He's showing how God could give righteousness to you being uncircumcised. Okay? Let's move on here. We've got some more to cover. Romans 4 verse 13. Now this is where it really gets tricky, and I've been bogging down the last three, four verses to try to give us this material so that we're equipped for these few verses here. Verse 13. For the promise given to Abraham that he should be the heir of the world. Now, Paul's been talking about righteousness imputed by faith without works to those that believe. And in verse 13, Paul's talking about Abraham and his time period back here when he was given a promise to be the heir of the world. Were you ever given a promise for that? No. Abraham was given a promise to be the heir of the world. Now, what did Abraham believe back here to be counted righteous? That he'd be the heir of the world, right? What do you believe to be counted righteous? Christ died on our sin, Christ died on the cross for our sins and resurrected for our justification. The content of your faith is different. The promise you have is eternal life based on Christ's shed blood. The promise he had was to be the heir of the world. Okay? People read Romans 4:13 think, oh, Paul's saying I can be the heir of the world. No. He's saying a promise was made to Abraham to be the heir of the world. Right? And we'll see later that you have a different thing. You have Christ on the cross, okay? But here the promise that he should be the heir of the world was not to Abraham or to his seed through the law. So now Paul is going to start dealing with the law program in Israel. We've dealt with circumcision. We've dealt with the Jew and Gentile separation. But now we're dealing with the law. What you see here is Abraham begat Isaac. Isaac begat Jacob. Jacob had 12 sons who were the 12 tribes of Israel, which was also the name given to Jacob, Israel. The 12 sons of Israel, the 12 tribes of Israel, who for hundreds of years were either wandering in the wilderness or in captivity to Egypt, rather, until they were delivered out of Egypt, and then in the wilderness on Mount Sinai they're given the law. So just because you read about Israel doesn't mean the law is there. This is why Jews who in your Bible and even today see the law as a privilege, and it was, see that as a mark of identification, and it was, are wrong to think that alone is what gives them a special benefit. It doesn't. The law was a curse. The law didn't add any benefit. It was a curse. Where did their benefit come from? The promise. Right? So I'm getting ahead of myself here. Romans 4:13. We should be that Abraham was the heir of the world was not to Abraham or to his seed through the law, but through the righteousness of faith. For if they which are of the law be heirs, faith is made void, and the promise made of none effect. The promise given to Abraham to be the heir of the world was given in Genesis 12, repeated in Genesis 13, Genesis 17, the covenant of circumcision, even in Genesis 22, when Abraham offered his son Isaac as a sacrifice, as James talks about. God reiterated that he would be an heir of the world and be a blessing to all the nations. Okay? In Genesis 22. This is not the promise you have. This is about Israel's earthly dominion. Now, covenant theologians come to these passages and say, well, the church gets that now. Right? The church comes back in the millennium and we reign on the earth now. We're not. We're not Abraham's circumcised Israel, Davidic law-obtaining Israel. Well, that's not us. Okay? The faith that we have is different than the faith that they have. The faith that they have, the faith given to Israel, is a promise to be the heir of the world. We were never given that promise. Okay. Where do we need to go? We need to go to Psalm 105, verse 8. We've seen in our studies of prophecy on Sunday the last few weeks that God will not forget Israel. Okay, he made a promise to them, and even though they break his law, he will not forget it. Didn't we see that back in Deuteronomy before? Psalm 105 is another place in verse 8 through 11 where God reminds them that even though they break his covenant, this is after David, after the law, after circumcision. Psalm 105, verse 8, he hath remembered his covenant forever, the word which he commanded to a thousand generations, which covenant he made with Abraham and his oath unto Isaac, and confirmed the same unto Jacob for a law, and to Israel for an everlasting covenant, saying, unto thee will I give the land of Canaan, the lot of your inheritance, when they were but a few men in number, yea, very few and strangers in it. And so he's saying, I'm going to give this land to you. It's an everlasting covenant, heir of the world. He will not forget. He will not renege. Romans 11 says, the faith and calling of God are without repentance. Okay? And so Romans 4 is talking about how the heir of the world is given to Israel. Is it through the law? They're keeping of it. They're doing the good works. They're circumcision. Or is it not? And of course, Paul's saying it's not through the law. It's through the righteousness of faith, which comes from Abraham's faith, the circumcision being a seal, a sign of that faith, and men of faith just keeping doing what God says to do. Right? What's the man of faith do when God says, here's the law? Well, he's going to try to do it. What happens when he breaks it? Sorry, God, I'm a sinner. Here's a sacrifice. Forgive me. The man of faith is repentant. Right? That's what happens. And so the man of faith, again, has that position of responsibility. Let's look at Galatians 3. I told you before that Galatians 3 and Romans 4 are corollary passages. Sometimes people say that they're commentaries on each other, and they're slightly different, but they deal with the same topics as the people in Galatia were being persuaded by Jews to be circumcised, to follow the law, because they were being taught that's where blessing has come from. Okay, Paul says that's not where it comes from. Galatians chapter 3, verse 16. Now to Abraham and his seed were the promises made. Let's look at verse 10. Verse 9 says, so then they which be of faith are blessed with faithful Abraham. We've already covered that. For as many as are of the works of the law are under a curse. For it is written, cursed is every one that continueth not in all things which are written in the books of the law to do them. Paul says the law is a curse. It doesn't provide a benefit. It doesn't provide a blessing. It's a curse because he's already proven that none of them can keep it. That no man is justified by the law in the sight of God is evident. For Habakkuk even says, the just shall live by faith. How is Abraham justified? We can go back through the whole argument again, right? Before works of the law, by faith. Right? Verse 12, the law is not of faith, but the man that does them shall live in them. So if they don't do the law in its entirety, then, you know, apparently they won't get righteousness. So how then does righteousness come? It can't be by the law. It's got to be by faith. How did David get righteousness? How did Abraham get righteousness? By faith, Paul says, not of works. Verse 13, Christ hath redeemed us from the curse of the law, being made a curse for us. For it is written, cursed is everyone that hangs on a tree, that the blessing of Abraham might come on the Gentiles through Jesus Christ, that we might receive the promise of the Spirit through faith. What's the blessing of Abraham? That he was counted righteous by his faith without works. And how does it come upon the Gentiles in verse 14? Through Jesus Christ. Was Jesus Christ anywhere in the equation in Genesis 12 and 15? No, he wasn't even there. He was having his faith and being the heir of the world is what he was believing. That was the promise. The promise wasn't Jesus Christ. It was the heir of the world. Okay. But through Jesus Christ, now we can receive the blessing of Abraham. Okay. Verse 15, verse 15, I speak after the manner of men. Though it be but a man's covenant, yet if it be confirmed, that no man disannuls or adds thereto. Now to Abraham and his seed were the promises made. He saith not to seeds as of many, but as of one, and to thy seed which is Christ. This is key for you under the dispensation of grace. When Paul's talking about you're the children of Abraham in Galatians 3, verse 29, and he's saying that he's your father in Romans chapter 4, it's not according to the multiplied seed of Abraham's promise. Okay, it's according to the singular seed of Jesus Christ. That's how you get the blessing of righteousness by faith. So again, there's a difference here between Abraham and his blessing, his promises rather, and Abraham and his covenant and Israel's inheritance and yours, because yours is through Jesus Christ. Theirs is through the promise and the covenants. All right. Verse 17. He says, this I say, the covenant that was confirmed before of God in Christ, the law, which was 430 years after, cannot disannul that it should make the promise of none effect. The promise that Israel would be a nation above the nations was not given in the law program. It was given to the fathers. The law was added to the promise for the sake of transgressions, which we'll see later in Galatians chapter 3. But if the promise were given in the law program and they failed to do it, you know what that means? That God's promises, they go away. If the promise was in the law program, depending on the works of Israel, when Israel broke the law, what does that mean? They no longer get the promises. That means when Israel goes away, we don't need them anymore. That means covenant theology is true. That means we don't need Israel. God gave them their chance. They failed. And there goes their promises. Now we get them. Right? That's not what Galatians 3 says. That's not what Romans 4 says. It says their promises, their inheritance of being heirs of the world was not through the law. It was through the promise. It was through the promise. Do we have any right to say that Israel, God's given up on Israel, or we've replaced Israel, or God's promises are not effect to Israel? We don't. Okay, so Galatians 3, verse 17. This I say, we read that one, verse 18. If the inheritance be of the law, it is no more of promise. If it's by works, it can no more be of grace. But God gave it to Abraham by promise. He gave the promise to Abraham to be heir of the world by faith, not by works, by his grace, not by the law. Okay? Let's look back at Romans 3 here, or Romans 4 rather. Paul says, if they which are of the law be heirs, faith is made void, and the promise is made of none effect. If it's true that God gives the inheritance of the world to Israel, earthly dominion to Israel, because of their obedience to the law, then there's a big problem. Okay? Because none of them kept it. All right? The only way God can fulfill that earthly dominion would be through Israel is if he gave it to them by grace through a promise, by faith. Right? And of course he did. We see in the testimony, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were given those promises. There was no law given to them. They weren't under the law a day in their life. The law was given to Moses on Mount Sinai. The law was not given in Genesis. It was given in Exodus 19. You see why it requires you to study the Bible here? We're rightly dividing Genesis and Exodus. If we don't do that, we're going to get mixed up. Okay, we're going to think, oh, it's all the same anyway. Abraham, Israel, law, you know, it's all the same. No, they're different. Abraham was uncircumcised here. He's circumcised here. There's no law here. There's a law here. You see? It matters. Okay? In Romans chapter 4, Paul says, if the promise to Israel of earthly dominion was by the law, then God's promise back here was just jokes. He's lying. Okay? Because they broke the law. That Mosaic law couldn't do anything for them. It was a curse. And Paul's saying that's not the case, of course. The promise of God is effectual. It's not made of none effect. It's not void. God's words don't come back void when he makes a promise, right? And so he made a promise to Abraham's seed and to be an heir of the world, not through the law program. Verse 15, Romans 4, Paul says, the law works wrath. That's why it couldn't be by the law. If earthly dominion was given to Israel through the law program, Mosaic covenant, the Old Testament, there's a problem. The law never benefited them. The law works wrath. Because if you don't do it all, you get cursed. And we've seen in Israel's history, half of the scripture testifies they got the curse, right? Their problem was how to be delivered from it. The problem was how was God going to fulfill those promises after all? Which is where that New Testament comes in to Israel, right? The law works wrath. For where no law is, there is no transgression. So the law works wrath because it condemns all who fail to do it. We saw that in Galatians 3 already. You know, 2 Corinthians 3, Paul calls the Old Testament law the ministration of death, which is fascinating. Because when God first gave the law back here, back in Exodus, he offers them the law and says, if you do these commandments, then I'll make you a mighty nation. Which he already promised to Abraham, right? He already promised back here. He said, if you do them, then I'll make you a kingdom of priests. And they say, we'll do it. And suddenly, the sky gets dark, lightning and thunder starts coming down. It's like God's upset, right? Because he realizes what's going on here. They just agreed to cursing, right? They should have said, hey, where no law is, there's no transgression. Forget the law thing, God. We'll just stay with the promises. Right? Just give us by grace what you told our fathers we would have. We'll go from there. But instead, what did they do? They murmured in the wilderness. They said, what are we going to eat? You know, how are we going to beat those bad guys? You know, let's take the law. Let's take the king. We need more earthly things, you know. Rudiments of the world. But in Romans 4, Paul says the law works wrath. It was a ministration of death. It's a curse, Galatians 3 says. Paul says where no law is, there is no transgression, which makes sense. The fewer laws you get, the less criminals you get. Right, that's just the fact of that Paul quotes in the Bible here. That's what the case is. Want more criminals, you get more laws. Laws do not reform people. Laws make criminals. Right?
That's right.
Be a lot less speeding tickets if there was no speeding limits. Right? And that's just, everybody knows this. Romans 4, verse 15, though, no laws, there's no transgression. So before the law, was there imputed unto them a breaking of the law? Before there was circumcision, was Abraham in violation of the circumcision? No. Right? So here are these uncircumcised people before circumcision, before the law, without the law. Where does your imputed righteousness come from? Faith. Right? Faith. There's nothing left. It's not by your works. There's no transgression here. Okay, it's by faith. Now, this verse is also used, and I've got to just say as a caveat here, taking out of its context and trying to figure out answers to tough doctrinal or theological questions, this verse is also used to explain the destiny of those who do not have the power in themselves to have faith in anything. Okay, you say, well, who's that? Young people, really young people, babies. Okay, people who have brain problems. Boy, you couldn't tell the gospel to them if you wanted to. They don't get it. They don't understand. What happens to these people? Well, the verse says, where no law is, there's no transgression. The law is the knowledge of sin, folks, right? And so the theological answer, of course, is where there is no knowledge of these things, then how can they put faith in it, you see? And there's a deeper answer than that, of course. Back in Paul's gospel is the one that saves these people. Paul's gospel is the answer to this. It's not has nothing to do with election, as Calvinists would say. You know, there's a lot of, we could spend another hour on all this. The baby baptisms, the confirmation, the age of accountability, and all of this stuff is wrapped up in these verses. Because people think you've got to be a part of this covenant in order to receive the blessings. So how do you get into the covenant? Well, we don't circumcise anymore. We baptize. The covenant doesn't do anything for you. It's a promise that God made by faith. Right? If it's not by your works, and the young person, a baby, can't do any good works or bad works, and they don't know any different, then how in the world can God save that person? Well, he was born involuntarily into Adam's race, which was sin. Well, how in the world does sin get taken care of? Involuntarily by Christ on the cross. See, the first Adam, last Adam. Right? So you have someone who can't do anything, can't have faith, but God takes care of the sin problem, folks. Okay? So in Romans chapter 4, there comes a time where there's a knowledge of these things, and again, this is another lesson for another day. And when there's the knowledge of right and wrong, there's the knowledge of sin, and that's what people interpret as an age of accountability. Then they're accountable to that. You see, there's not an age. You know, the Jews say at 12 years old they have bar mitzvah and that sort of thing. You know, I remember at a church camp that I once attended, there was a girl who was so upset. We were having the traditional conservative altar call, right? We're having a gospel message supposedly, and you know the gospel was barely there, and people on the sides are lined up waiting for people to come out, you know, out of the crowd, and this girl was just weeping in the crowd, sobbing. And later we inquire, why in the world are you crying? And she was told by her parents and her church that she could not be saved, could not be baptized, which was associated in her denomination with salvation in some way, because she was not old enough yet. She was 11 years old. She hadn't yet reached 12. She's just so excited because next year I can do it. What is that? And then people get that strange doctrine, misunderstand this thinking that we need to belong to a covenant that somehow has to do with our an age of accountability, which doesn't exist. Okay? It has to do with your understanding. That girl understood her sin. She understood, the gospel was preached that day, she understood the cross. Why couldn't she be saved by faith? Well, Christ is on the cross. She could. Okay? So remember that. Okay? There's a lot of confusion in religion out there. Again, I mentioned the baby baptisms, which has the same idea in the Reformed Church and the Presbyterians, where they baptize the babies, putting them in what they think is that covenant of grace. Who needs a covenant when you have Christ on the cross? The babies don't get it anyway. They didn't commit any sins. No. Right? They don't have any knowledge of it. How in the world, how are they going to deal with it? Okay, so it's just a strange thing all around. And so you've got the adults who are trying to save the babies and they themselves don't know the gospel, but it's all a mess. We're trying to fix that in Romans 4, verse 16, rather. Paul ends his argument here where he says, therefore, it is of faith that it might be of grace. Now, this is the only second time Paul's mentioned the word grace. Both of them appear in chapter 4. The first time was back up in verse 4. Now to him that worketh is the reward not reckoned of grace, but of debt. If you work for your righteousness, and this applies to anyone anytime, by the way, folks. If anyone works, any human works for their righteousness, it's not of grace anymore. God owes it to you, apparently, or you owe God something, right? It's of debt. It's not of grace. Romans 4, verse 16, the fact that God only, always, saves by His grace and faith is evidence because of what Paul's proved in these verses. It is of faith that it might be of grace. If it were by works, it couldn't be grace anymore. Romans 11, 6. Don't you know Romans 11, 6, where it says, if by grace, then it's no more works. Otherwise, grace is no more grace. If it be of works, then it's no more grace. So you can't have the two together. Water and oil problem, right? Mm-hmm. Romans 4, 16. The fact that the promise given to Israel was not based in the law and their works, but by the faith given to Abraham. The fact that Gentiles at any time could be justified by having faith in God's instructions and whatever He instructed them to do, right? That faith through Abraham and his fatherhood, that it would be by grace. Nobody can offer their works to God and say, I earned this. It's by faith in God and by grace. So it is a faith that it might be by grace. To the end, the promise might be sure to all the seed. Not to that only which is of the law, but to that also which is of the faith of Abraham, who is the father of us all. So this is the verse where people say, we're part of Israel. Adam Clark in his commentary says, on this account, the promise is mercifully grounded, not on obedience to the law, but on the infinite goodness of God. And thus the promise is sure to all the seed, to all, both Jews and Gentiles, who believe in Christ Jesus, have a right to all the blessings contained in the Abrahamic covenant. And that pretty much sums it up. Okay, a lot of Christianity thinks that this verse is the tie that takes the church, and because of grace and faith, because of Father Abraham, now we can claim all of the Abrahamic covenant. Everything that God promised Abraham, we get. Not so, folks. He's talking about how you're justified by faith, not about you inheriting Israel's covenants. It has nothing to do with it. In fact, he's trying to say that being Israel, being circumcised, is not a means of blessing. Okay? So it shouldn't make a difference if you're a child of Abraham or not. The only relationship you have to Abraham is that he was justified by faith without works, just like you are. That's it. And he was alive before you, thus making, chronologically, him your father in that way. You have no heritage, no lineage to him. You have no physical lineage by far. He didn't believe the same thing you believed, which is Christ on the cross. So there's no doctrinal precedent there. It's just he was justified by faith. His faith was counted for righteousness, just like you. His faith was in a promise of earthly dominion. Your faith is in the promise of Jesus Christ's death and resurrection for your sins. Okay, there's a difference there. But here, the reason why Paul's bringing it up is that it's of faith and by grace for Abraham and you, so that the promise might be sure to all the seed. The promise to Israel to have earthly dominion. The promise to you to have heavenly dominion. Right? How do you know that's a sure promise? Because it's by grace through faith. How do you know that you're saved at all? Because it's by grace through faith. If it were by your works, you would have no assurance. Right? Isn't that what we see all through Israel's program back there? People were, they weren't sure. Because they had faith, but didn't know what their faith was grounded in. It was just faith in God. Right? They trusted the promise and the covenants, but how is God going to do this? They don't know. Right? You now know that which was secret. How men can be justified by faith, by God's grace, without works, is based on Christ's shed blood on the cross, which Paul mentions down in verse 24 and 25. That it shall be imputed to you if we believe on Him that raised up Jesus our Lord from the dead, who was delivered for our offenses and raised again for our justification. And so the sureness there has to do because of God performs the action. He performs the justification by His grace, which tells you something. And this is, if we can end on this, I think this will be good to remember, that every man in the Bible at all times who gets righteousness from God or salvation from God is saved by God's grace, by their faith in what God instructs them at all times. Okay, Abraham was justified by faith. Why did he get the promise? God's grace. Right? David, how was he forgiven? By God's grace. By his faith. He was pleading for mercy. Right? He wanted to be faithful. He was a sinner though. Okay, all men are saved by God's grace. It's not until this dispensation where grace is amplified. It abounds. Grace has the spotlight shone on it. Because we now know the means of God's grace. So it's thus the dispensation of God's grace. But God saves by grace and faith at all times. No one at any time was saved by their works. If they were, the promise has no effect, as we read tonight. Right? And so this is what Paul's gospel is all about. His gospel is revealing. Look at Romans 1:16. If you know this verse, which was the theme verse of the book, Paul says, I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation, not the power of you to save yourself. It's the power of God unto salvation, that's grace, to everyone that believes. Right? Not to those who are circumcised or to those who are under the law, to everyone that believes. To the Jew first. Everyone, all the Jews knew that. And also to the Greek. Everybody, Paul says. There's no difference. It's God that saves by grace, and it's by those that believe. And he's just explaining that in detail in Romans 4. How that and why that is to be so. Okay? So God's righteousness by grace through men of faith, whether it be in the time of promise, whether it be in the time of the law, whether it be in this dispensation of grace, God can only save people by his grace through faith. Now the content of his faith differs, right? The promise was different here, it was the heir of the world, to the information over here where he says do the law, to the information to you where he says in Romans 4, 5, don't work at all, to him that worketh not. Titus 3, 5, not by works of righteousness which you have done. So he tells you not to work at all, to emphasize his grace. But these people, he says something different. It was always by faith and by God's grace. Okay? God always saves by grace through faith, but there are times when the men of faith hear God's words, which are, do this, do that. Okay? And the men of faith does the best it can. And God sees the thoughts and intents of your heart, Hebrews 4, and he knows if you're doing that or not. Right? Doesn't he? You know what Hebrews 4:12 says? And so God is the judge of that, and but he does not judge men according to works, but Romans 2:16, according to Paul's gospel, which is by grace through faith. Okay, so that's what Romans 4 is dealing with here. And we'll pick it up next week, starting in verse 17, where Paul deals with Abraham's faith specifically and how he didn't struggle with it, but rather just rested in what God was able to do. And Paul says that was written for our sake as well. It's what we do. We rest in what Christ already did, not what God is able to do, but what he did already. Okay, so we say we walk by faith, not by sight, but in a sense we read the word of God, and if we believe it, it's already done. There's nothing left for him to do. So, all right, any questions about that? Any thoughts?
That's good.